Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Jason Snell from Six Colors and Macworld is here to talk about his favorite iPad setup. And we're going to talk about if maybe an iPhone SE is coming. Plus, what's the future of design in the iPhone? Jason's going to give us his thoughts on that, all that. And we'll have some more stuff, too, right here on iOS Today. Welcome to iOS Today. This is the show where we talk about iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches, Apple Pencils. This is
accessories.
Jason. Yes, this is Jason Snell.
Hello, I feel like I need to, without Leo here, do I need to bring the Leo energy? That's hard to do. Megan, it's great to have you here with me today on my show. It's something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it really depends on what Leo energy you're going to bring.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. I don't know. I've always admired the energy Leo brings, but I'm happy to fill in for him today and talk about iOS stuff, which I love.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you've got your whole setup here.
Yeah, we decided to go all the way today because that's all, you know, we're going to talk about accessories a little bit and writing and typing and things like that. And I wrote about this a couple weeks ago and people seemed really interested in it. So there's a lot of hunger from some people about like different iPad setups.
Yeah, you wrote about one keyboard and then I was like, oh my God, I have to find out what his setup is. And then the next day I looked on your website on sixcolors.com and then there it was, like your whole explanation. And it was set up in your kitchen.
Yeah.
And I, like many other people, also wanted to know about the other stuff in your kitchen.
Yeah, you know, so you tweet a picture.
There it is.
And somebody's going to say, first they're going to say like, what product is that and what is the setup and why is it there? But also you realize that the dish rag and the compost bin and the granite countertop are gonna be also questions that people have about it. Also, somebody asked how I keep my kitchen so clean, and the answer is before you take a picture and put it on the internet, clean your kitchen up. That's the secret.
Right, exactly. Like that's why I have people over to my house so that I can clean my house.
That's
like,
you got to invite people regularly so that you can keep the house clean.
Yeah.
But that is my setup. I spend most of my time at a desk writing on a Mac in my office, but I do work in my kitchen for a change of pace. I think it really helps my productivity to kind of move to some different locations during the day instead of just sitting in front of the screen. And I love writing on the iPad. And so I ended up with this after a bunch of different iterations. I ended up finding the stand and an external keyboard. I went through a few different keyboards, and it's a great little setup.
So what is the stand?
So that stand is, I found it on Amazon stand when somebody recommended it to me. It is the Viazon Fib brand name, iPad Pro stand. And it's pretty cool. It's got these little sort of spring-loaded clamps on the side, and it comes with two different, so you can go, you know, you can slide in different sizes, and it comes with a smaller one and a larger one. This is the 12.9 iPad, but there's also a smaller one for smaller devices. And it is pretty cool because it's a metal base. It's very much like an iMac base, which is kind of nice. And then it's got this full adjustability. You can tilt it in both directions. And for extra fun, you can also choose between portrait and landscape. So if I'm writing just an article, if I want something in like split view, I'll do it like this, right? Because that makes sense to have the extra width. And so I'll do that. But if I'm writing an article, I will flip it into this view because when I'm writing an article, I can see my whole article, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
So it's ended up being a pretty good buy. And it's not that expensive. And it's not cheap. One of the things that happens with Amazon stuff, when somebody says, oh, I bought this stand on Amazon from a brand you've never heard of, a lot of it you figure this is really cheap plastic junk. And this one's actually been pretty good. So I haven't done a thorough examination of all of these iPad stands in order to say that this is the best one. But I can say that I bought it, kind of took a flyer on it. And I really like it. And it turns out I hadn't really thought about portrait versus landscape and that kind of old, like they used to make computer monitors that pivoted, right? But it's actually perfect for the iPad because the iPad works great in both orientations. And sometimes I use it in portrait and sometimes in landscape.
And you can move it back and forth, right? So, like, we're seeing on the screen someone using it in a more flat
way. Yeah, I mean, the hinge will move in all sorts of different angles. Like, it's not ratcheting between little angles. It's not only is it not fixed, but it's completely free flowing. So you can set it however you want it. And then, of course, since this is just a clip, you can actually push the – right now it's kind of sitting low in the clip, but you could slide it up so that it's higher up in the clip as well. So there's a lot of different options for ergonomics when you're sitting or standing in a location where you want to work on your iPad.
And it could be flat so you could stick your cocktail on it if you needed to.
I suppose you could turn it into a table for the evening.
Okay. So $39.99, that's not bad.
It's not bad, right. I feel like you get what you pay for with this, which is that was my trepidation, was is it $40 stand for an iPad going to be just a lousy piece of plastic? And it's not. It's pretty good. It's got plastic parts and metal parts and is pretty functional. So I've been happy with it.
Yeah, that's a good way to buy things on Amazon. I feel like, you could go on Amazon and look up iPad stand, and then you, like you said, you'd just be like, I don't know, and you'd read reviews. But if you know someone who says, I ordered this, I loved it, I've gotten some really good purchases
right
that way.
And I had a guy on Twitter I was talking about looking for a better iPad stand because I was just using the smart cover. And so it was ergonomically, it was really bad because it was very low on the bar of my kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something a little bit higher up. And he said, I bought this and it was great. And I was like, all right, looks good. Let's take a chance. Mm-hmm. And it's actually pretty great.
And your keyboard there looks pretty amazing too.
That's the other trick here, right? Is that I've got this up there, but I need a keyboard down here mm-hmm. in order to do my writing. And I started with a bunch of USB keyboards. You can here's the secret. The Lightning USB 3 adapter that Apple makes will let you attach basically any keyboard you want via USB. You plug the Lightning cable, the Lightning adapter into your iPad. You plug the power via Lightning into the adapter because you need to power a lot of USB devices. And then you plug your USB keyboard into that adapter and it just kind of works. It's pretty amazing. So I started with a bunch of I like mechanical keyboards, clicky keyboards. Mm-hmm. I started with a bunch of those and tried them out. And then at one point I realized that Matthias, which makes a bunch of different mechanical keyboards for Apple products as well as for sort of PC products, so they're Apple friendly, they make a mechanical keyboard that is Bluetooth, which is even better. And there are not that many Bluetooth mechanical keyboards. Mm-hmm. So I bought the Laptop Pro. And that's what I've got here. And because it's silver, it actually kind of matches with the stand of the iMac or of the iPad. It's not an iMac. It's a very, very small iMac. And it works great. So now that's my setup, because then I don't have to plug in the adapter and the power and the keyboard and sort of I carried it all kind of in a chain of cables and things. And now with this, it's just the stand. I carry out the stand and the keyboard from my office and set them down, and I'm ready to go immediately.
So I know with I use the Colorware Bluetooth keyboard, and one thing I was wary of is like, oh, you have to charge it. I don't want another thing to charge. But the thing about keyboards, you charge them like every 3 or 4 months or something.
Yeah, this thing has a huge battery in it. In fact, I realized the other day that I don't remember where I put the charging cable that came with it, because it's a little weird. Its charging cable is a USB-A.
Oh.
And you never really think about it as a USB user, but you never see a cable that is USB-A on both sides.
Yeah.
Right? It's usually either the B, the squarish B connector, uh-huh. or you see USB-A to mini or micro. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where that is in my office. You can see it. You can actually plug devices into it and charge them off of the internal battery of the keyboard. But the good news is the battery in this thing is so big that I have not yet needed to charge it since I first got it and charged it. So, but I need to find that cable.
Yeah. Now that you've said that, of course, it's going to run out of battery.
Yeah. Maybe even today while we're sitting here.
So what's interesting to me is that you have your desktop set up, which you say really hasn't changed since 2014. That's what you wrote on yours.
Yeah. Yeah. When I set up my office and I got an iMac and I put it on an ARM, I got the Visa mount iMac 5K. And I replaced it with an iMac Pro not too long ago, but it's the same setup. And, it's a sit-stand desk that's adjustable, and I've got a mechanical keyboard attached to it. It's basically the same since 2014 as my base, sort of the Mac that I use to do audio editing and podcasting and things like that.
And so
that's
there,
it.
We're seeing
and the foam orange desk. Brain. You got to have one of those.
Do you punch that when you're thinking or...
You squeeze it gently to get the thoughts out.
Okay,
that's what you have to do there.
And that is your podcast.
For thinking, yeah.
Set up too. That's cool. So then you have this for like your kitchen or where do you really only use this in the kitchen?
I use this basically in the kitchen because that's like my second site for writing when the kids aren't home. Like mm-hmm. that's once they get home, I got to get out of there because they're running around and it's crazy. But there's mm-hmm. in the morning or early afternoon, I can go in there and do it. If I'm going to a cafe or something like that, or if I'm going to go sit in the backyard, I this is not a setup for that.
You bring your desktop for that. Your
big, I take the iMac Pro off.
Big podcasting.
I'm that guy, and bring it over to Starbucks, set it down, and then the magic happens.
So, what do you use in a cafe?
In a cafe, I use the Bridge keyboard, which is this, which is a. For those to see, it is a deck, basically the bottom half of what looks like a MacBook keyboard with the little clips on it. And the nice thing about it is that the iPad slides right in. They make this for the 10.5 and the 12.9 and the 9.7. And it's a Bluetooth keyboard. But once it slid into these little clips, which again will pivot to sort of any direction, it looks like a laptop. And feels like a laptop. I mean, there's no trackpad because iOS doesn't do that yet. But I can take this with me and it can sit on my lap in the backyard. And it can go with me to a cafe. Or if I'm going to an event, when I cover Apple events now, I generally bring an iPad, not a laptop. And I use this. And then the other, sometimes if I'm only going to be working like on a hard surface at a Starbucks or something like that, I'll just go to the standard old smart keyboard, which is a lot less exciting to show and tell about. But because the value in the Bridge keyboard is not only can you use it on a table, you can use it in your lap, like, and not sort of perched and be very still. You know, a lot of these keyboards for iPads and for the Microsoft Surface, they've got kind of like that kickstand kind of approach. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is if you jostle at all, it will get really shaky. And what you really want, or at least what I really want, is that laptop feel. I want it, you know, solid in my lap while I'm sitting in a camp chair in my backyard under the tree on a warm day, something like that, and writing. And the Bridge keyboard will do that.
Okay.
So I use this for travel and in the backyard.
Backyard. And then are you able to use your iPad in the backyard? Like, can you still see in the sun? That's my
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got a giant redwood tree in my backyard, so there's usually shade I can find. But it's bright enough. I can crank up the brightness and without too much trouble and do it. And I love it. We're just getting into that season now here in Northern California where we're having some warm days where I can go back there in the backyard. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Okay, those are what your setup is. You mentioned, I want to go back to something you mentioned, that iOS doesn't have the trackpad yet. Do you know something we don't know?
No, I mean, I don't know anything secret from Apple. Oh, no, I've revealed everything now. Apple, the burly men from Apple are outside and they're going to drag me away.
There they are.
I think there's a lot of controversy about this because people say, oh, well, you know, a pointing device on iOS doesn't make sense. And I think what they're thinking of is a traditional kind of Mac cursor. But I got a couple of data points here. One is Apple TV, right? Apple TV uses a trackpad. It doesn't have a mouse pointer on it. It has this setup where as you move with the trackpad, and we can argue whether this is a good interface for the Apple TV or not, but Apple has implemented it. Mm-hmm. You can use that thing to move around and different items get selected. So that's an iOS pointing device that Apple makes. It's a first-party iOS pointing device. It's not quite iOS, it's tvOS, but it's in the vicinity. Mm-hmm. So we know that they have thought about this. And the way you build Apple TV apps is not that different from the way iOS apps are built. The other thing I'll point out is that in iOS, I want to say 9, it might have even been 8, they added this text selection thing where you can, it's 3D touch mm-hmm. on an iPhone, and on an iPad, it's two fingers down on the keyboard, at which point you get a little text cursor mm-hmm. that looks exactly like a text insertion cursor that you would find on a Mac, mm-hmm. and you can move it around, and you can double tap to select things. And at that point, there's a cursor in iOS. Yeah. So I would like it if Apple would just embrace external pointing device as an option. Again, nobody's saying that this should be mandatory, but like if I take a Bluetooth trackpad and stick it next to this keyboard, even if it only works for selecting text, why not let me do that? The software is already in there. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that Apple will do it, not as a primary interface mechanism, but just as something for the people who really care enough about text selection to outfit their iPad with a Bluetooth pointing device.
Right. So do you, are you in the I would like iOS and macOS to combine camp or outside of that camp?
Well, I'm, what I always say, because, you know, I do a lot of podcasts where I talk about to people who are like diehard Mac users especially, and I always like to say I'm team both. Like, I'm not team iPad or team Mac. I every now and then I see somebody refer to me as like, well, you know, all those people who love the iPad, like Jason. It's like, well, yeah, but I use my Mac all day too, and I love my Mac. So I think I want to see Apple's platforms be appropriate to themselves, but also not fall behind. And my concern is that by saying, well, laptops and desktops are the province of the Mac, and only tablets and phones are iOS, I feel like Apple is closing itself off from some possibilities that we see Microsoft embracing, where they've got convertibles, which is not something Apple can really do right now. I try to do it, right, with these accessories, yeah. But Apple is not actively participating in that other than the smart keyboard. And why should there not be an iOS laptop? Like, I would love, I've got this Bridge keyboard here, and what it's convinced me is you could make an iOS laptop and it would be pretty good. I'm not sure Apple wants to do that as long as they make Mac laptops. So there's this question, what, you know, how does it all come together? That's the question of the day, I think. And obviously Apple has, you know, what they're going to do, and we don't know what it is yet, so we have to guess. I think the rumor that there's this thing called Marzipan, which is a Mark Gurman rumor from Bloomberg that he reported about, the idea that Apple's working on a way for iOS app developers to target the Mac as well. I wonder if that is sort of Apple saying, what if we can extend iOS concepts over to things like laptops? And maybe that's as simple as iOS apps running in macOS, or maybe it's as complicated as when you take an iOS app and run it on a Mac, it gets a menu bar and it gets cursor support and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And at that point, could you also touch those if there was a touchscreen Mac? It's kind of out there. So I would like, what I don't want to have happen is the Mac go away when there are still things the Mac does that iOS doesn't do. And I think it'll be a while before we get to that point, because iOS has a lot more growing to do. And I think ideally it'll get to the point where it won't matter. Like, you'll be using the new Apple thing and you won't even realize that you're not using the Mac anymore. You're using an iOS device, or you're using something that's some weird new Apple OS that's neither iOS nor Mac, but is sort of both of them.
Well, what's interesting is there already are so many gestures that are different just on the iPad and the iPhone.
That's true.
Like, I was going to pull down to, Kevin asked me to adjust my brightness, and I tried to do it like I was adjusting it on the iPhone 10.
On the iPhone 10 from the upper right corner.
Yeah.
It's not there.
Why can't you do that on the iPad? It's just so, it's like those little things that are slightly different.
Right. And so that's, there's this question of consistency versus having each thing be true to itself. Mm-hmm. But it can be super frustrating. I have that all the time where I don't remember exactly where I should be swiping from when I'm on my iPad now, because the iPhone 10 has kind of gotten into my head. Or vice versa, I'll be on my iPhone and I'll swipe up from the bottom and it'll take me to the home screen when what I really was thinking in that moment was I want to do Control Center.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So another way you're trying to make the iPad more like a laptop is through File Browser.
Yeah, File Browser is an app that I discovered. I was looking for it because Panic announced that they're not going to really develop Transmit for iOS anymore, the FTP client that they do. And I do have to transfer files on the internet. So File Browser is nothing to look at. If you're looking at it now, you'll see it's really boring. What's interesting about it is that it's an FTP client and also an SMB client for local file sharing, and it works with files. So I can bring up this is an FTP server that my website is on, but if I go to the Files app, File Browser is a participant in the Files app, so that I can come back out here and choose File Browser, and now I'm in Files, but I'm actually viewing my local SMB server which is basically a file sharing on my home network. Because I had this issue where I would not be able to get to the files on my file server from my iPad, right? Which is super frustrating. And I could download them to a third-party app and then move them over. But once it's in the Files app, any app that supports files will be able to. So this is I'm on my web server now. Like, this is just theincomparable.com, right? Like, this is where all the files are. This is where all the podcasts are. Like, it's all in there, and that means any other app can import from there. So if I go to Ferrite, which is my audio editor of choice, I love editing podcasts in Ferrite, and you can do, you know, this is last week's episode of my podcast, The Incomparable, and it's all the whole hour and a half done in Ferrite. But if I want to bring in a new file here, I can now say import audio, browse, it brings up the files interface, and here we go. I'm now able to just pluck a file off of not just Dropbox, but off of, when I'm at home, my local file sharing from my server that I have in my house, and just say, yes, import that file, and it just comes in to Ferrite, which is awesome. Now, I realize if you're a Mac or PC user, you're like, oh, yes, you can copy files on a network. How exciting for you. But for iOS, it's a big deal, and it's been a missing piece. And I'm frustrated that Apple doesn't offer file sharing like this in files built in. Mm-hmm. Like, connecting to an SMB server should not be complicated. It should just work in the Files app. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why Apple is not supporting that. I also don't know why Apple doesn't support plugging in a USB hard drive or an SD card and having that show up in the Files app. Mm-hmm. But there are workarounds. So this is one of those. So File Browser does the trick in terms of, it's nothing much to look at, but it connects to the Files app and lets you connect all sorts of different network formats that are not supported by Files itself.
Yeah, so that's one of the, it's $5.99, one-time purchase, right? It's not a subscription fee. But it's one of those apps that I'm just like, oh, well, probably Apple will implement this. So I am always so impressed with developers who develop apps like this that are like, fill a knee right now when they must know that probably.
Yeah, this is not a bad bet, I think, only because I don't know why these things aren't supported already. So mm-hmm. I think File Browser's theory is maybe Apple's just decided that they're too esoteric, that FTP is too esoteric, mm-hmm. that SMB shares locally, which I don't, that baffles me about why Apple doesn't support that. But I think it's not a bad bet for them to make. Like, let's support all of these things. And even if Apple adds support for like one network transfer format, they're probably not going to add support for the other 10 that this app supports. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever been like, oh man, why can't I just connect to my FTP server and pull that file off via the Files app? File Browser will do the trick. It's not, you know, it's not beautiful, and it's got some issues. Occasionally you have to switch into File Browser to basically log in, and then you can start to use files. But mm-hmm. it's the best one I've found so far.
All right. Well, do we have anything else on your setup or how you?
I don't know. There's so much here, but I think we've covered enough. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always interested in people's setup because I'm a big fan of Wirecutter, as I'm sure you are.
I am too. Yeah.
And they have not updated, or they keep recommending just the Mac keyboards, the Mac Smart keyboard. That's for the iPad Pro.
The Apple Smart keyboard.
The Smart keyboard.
You know what? I have to say, if you're going to recommend one external keyboard for the iPad Pro, mm-hmm. I think the Smart Keyboard's the right one. I don't love the 12.9 Smart Keyboard because it's just so huge, mm-hmm. because the iPad is so huge. But, you know, it works. You don't have to charge it. It makes its own stand. Like, there's so much going for it that I think that it's great that Apple makes that available. And it's like the broadest selection you could make. So I get why Wirecutter does it. But there are lots of other options, and mm-hmm. the Smart Keyboard is not going to be the best option for everybody, but I do think it's kind of the best option for anybody, just random person. Mm-hmm. That's generally what I would recommend. But for some people, it's like, but I don't want that. I want, you know, keys that actually move that aren't made of fabric, or I want things that really click and move a lot, or I want a big stand that raises it up. There's so many other options out there.
Yeah. I mean, I want red, and then I want stylish. And so I have many different. So I have the Colorware keyboard and the Studio Neat
Canopy, which is a great,
which I love. And it, you know, then I can carry my keyboard in this neat way, but then I don't have a case for, then I have to have a separate, I have a pad and quill, separate leather case that fits the iPad, but then it doesn't fit on here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, but I like what you've done, which is like you have the setup for the kitchen and the setup for
coffee shop. Isn't it great if you, I mean, I write about this stuff for a living, but yeah, sure, it's great. Buy 10 different accessories for your iPad and you've spent more than the iPad on the accessories.
Exactly.
But one of the things I'm trying to do is just kind of explore what the options are. Yeah. And then I think if you're, you know, listening to or watching this, you're thinking, oh, now that's what I'm interested in. One of these many options. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to buy all of them. But like the Canopy, if you really like the Magic Keyboard that Apple makes, because yours is just a colorized version mm-hmm. of the Apple Magic Keyboard, the Canopy is great. Because it lets you take your Magic Keyboard with you and use it and prop up the iPad when you get to wherever you're going. Mm-hmm. Like that's all it's for. It only works with that keyboard. And if you like that keyboard, that is a great option.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, moving on, you had a piece this week on Tom's Guide.
I did.
And that was about the future of the iPhone design and whether we're going to get rid of all the buttons, whether the side buttons might be gone, the everything. What do you think about
that? Apple's war on buttons. We always used to joke, and I know I trot this one out a lot, but Steve Jobs wore turtlenecks. We always used to joke because he hated buttons.
Mm-hmm.
and if you think about Apple, and it's Johnny Ive, like Apple's whole design sense since Johnny Ive got there is, how can we make this simpler? How can we move this toward a featureless slab? Like that's the ideal. The monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey is the ultimate Apple product, right? It's a featureless slab. What does it do? What doesn't it do? It does everything and nothing. So when they make these products, what they're trying to do is, you know, ask themselves, how do I make it thinner and lighter? How do I make it have fewer buttons and fewer ports? That's always what they're asking. And we can always argue like, yeah, but on this computer, I really want a lot of ports. And, you know, my iMac Pro has a lot of ports on the back. They oftentimes make the right decisions. Oftentimes, they don't. But when we think about the iPhone, I feel like that's always the place to start. So Tom's Guide wanted me to write a piece about, like, where Apple goes next with the iPhone design. And I felt like, let's just do a checklist. What could they remove? Because in many ways, that's the story of doing an iPhone design, is what do they take out? They took out the home button last time. They took out the headphone jack a couple years ago. So what's left for them to take off? And the answer is there's not a lot, right? There's
mm-hmm. Yeah, power and volume and then the sound button.
Yeah, yeah, but there are. See, but yes, there are. Three buttons mm-hmm. and a switch at the top.
Yeah, I forget about the switch. Do you often use the switch?
I leave it on all the time, so I basically don't use it either. And that's what I was thinking is I think there are – I get the reason that Apple has kept the buttons on the iPhone. First off, it's good to have hardware buttons. If you have no hardware buttons, you end up like the Apple Watch mm-hmm. where or you don't have any easy way to connect if you don't have a port.
Mm-hmm.
The Apple Watch does have a couple of buttons. Mm-hmm. You got to have buttons so you can say like mash them in order to do a restart. That's the importance.
Yes.
But do you need three and a switch? Maybe not. Like Apple with the iPad for a while had that if you mashed the volume down button, it acted as a mute. So I don't see why they need the mute switch. If you hold down volume down, you could have it mute and hold down volume up and it would turn the mute back off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some combination of the wake sleep button, the volume up and down button and the switch could come off of it. I don't know what they're going to choose, and it depends on like how they have them behave, and that's a sort of design decision that they would have to make. But I feel like they could probably get rid of a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that will happen anytime soon, but I look at that and think there's some extra buttons there mm-hmm. that don't need to be there. And if you're asking yourself why be obsessed with it? Like they think the simpler designs are nicer. Also, you know, it's a mechanical button. It's more prone to failure. They have to support that. It takes up space on the inside because they have to have the hardware on the inside to accept a moving object and detect mm-hmm. its motion, that if you get rid of it, you've got more space on the inside for either fancy electronics or battery. And it helps with waterproofing to have fewer areas of ingress in the phone.
Right.
So there are lots of reasons beyond just the design aesthetic, but the design aesthetic drives a lot of it, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the buttons, the volume buttons and the mute button are complicated too. We had a viewer last week or 2 weeks ago ask because, you know, there was his Siri was louder than his podcast when he was listening, and how do you adjust? And, you know, Android users will know you can adjust that, but... Like, I think here it's like, what am I adjusting with this volume? Not
right,
everything.
And it depends on the context, right? Like, if a sound is playing, you're adjusting that. Otherwise, you're adjusting, like, if your phone is ringing, you're adjusting the ringer.
Right.
But if it's not, you're adjusting the system volume.
Mm-hmm.
Super confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard from a lot of people who are frustrated because the sleep-wake button and the volume button are on opposite sides.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very natural to sort of squeeze with your hand that...
Mm-hmm.
And you take a screenshot if you hit both of them, which, and then you're like, oh, do I want to save this or do I want to open it and tell it not to save it? And it's a whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, I think they could simplify it. The idea of the sleep wake button going away is terrifying on a bunch of different levels. Cause like, how will I turn my iPhone on and off?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we already now on the iPhone X have tap to wake.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really need to press that button, and they could probably pretty intelligently figure out when you're not using it, and it's already pretty aggressive in sort of like putting it to sleep when you're not using it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, there would be some details involved, but they could totally do it if they want to get rid of those buttons, and maybe that's okay. And yeah, the ringer switch is there, I think, because of the tradition. It's a phone. You might need to, everybody says, oh, silence your phones, you're in the movie mm-hmm. theater and all of that, but would it be that different to just mash the volume down button to get that?
No.
I and then you can get rid of that whole slider thing.
Right. Okay, so we have about like 19 lightning cables in our bedroom where mm-hmm. all of our kids have to charge their phones, but they're usually all taken or gone, and so I'm left with my wireless charging pad. And I guess 7 out of 10 times I put it on there, I put it on wrong and it doesn't charge. So please tell me they're not going to get rid of the lightning port for charging.
I don't think they are for a long time. And I know it's sort of popular for people, for pundits to say, oh, well, next to go is the lightning port. The Apple Watch, so I mentioned it earlier, the Apple Watch does have hardware buttons, so you can mash them if you really get in trouble. But what it doesn't have is a port. And if you've ever thought about using a beta, a watchOS beta on the Apple Watch, they warn you sternly, like, I run betas on my iPad and my iPhone and my Mac and not on my Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you truly brick an Apple Watch, you can't plug it in somewhere and restore it because there's no port.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you kill your iPhone, you can plug it into a Mac and or a PC and do a complete restore and get it back to functionality. So there are a lot of reasons to have a hardware access to an iPhone. So I feel like for that reason, it'll stick around for a while. Also, the wireless charging thing, it's like, it's way less efficient than the wired charging, as convenient as it is in certain circumstances. So they would need, I feel like the wireless stuff has to evolve and just be much more efficient and much better and much more prevalent everywhere in the world. Because, you know, you kind of want them to be at all the cafes and all the places where there are USB plugs now. Now, I love the Mophie wireless charging base. I think that's the best one, and I have tried several of those. That one I can actually set it down on and get a charge without it falling off.
Yeah, I have that one too, and that's not the one that I was talking about that falls off. I can't remember what mine is, but it's the other one.
It's the other one.
Yeah,
that's the one that's not as good.
Yeah.
The Mophie one is the best.
So, because, you have to arrange it exactly right to get the light to shine, and some, you know, if something knocks it off.
Yeah, and at that point, you just plug in the cable and be done, and it'll charge a lot faster.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, would Apple love to have a world where these things are completely sealed and there's nothing you could plug into it? Of course they would.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. It's Apple. Of course it wants that. But I think it's going to be a while. Just there's too many reasons, multiple reasons, right? Getting data in and out and getting power in and out reliably, that you want one connector somewhere. I think, you know, the headphone jack, I get why they did that, because they said, well, look, you can plug it in here. To get rid of that entirely and say everything is wireless from now on is probably going to be that, you know, if it happens, it's going to be a long time from now, because ultimately, I think you want that backup of being able to plug it in and not have to like take it back to the factory if something really goes wrong.
Right. I just want to be able to look at my iPad or iPhone and like make a certain expression and then have the corresponding emoji show up.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. I don't think that's too much to ask.
I would not. That will happen way before the lightning port goes away.
Okay. Good to know. Like that. Yeah. Like Kevin. If I could just have Kevin, he shows emojis according to my feelings sometimes on that screen.
That's good.
Let's move on to some news. Spotify updated its app. This was morning news. They had a big New York presentation this morning before either of us were awake. So neither of us are regular Spotify users, but apparently they were doing some things for the free users, and I was paying for Spotify for about a year. I didn't realize I was paying for it. I was also paying for Apple Music. But I think this is interesting. Now, I know Spotify has more users, but Apple Music has all paying users. So I know you haven't had a lot of time to think about your thoughts on Spotify upping the freemium users' benefits, but do you have any thoughts yet on this?
I think Spotify's in a really interesting case where they have this free tier that Apple doesn't have, and it costs them, right? I mean, they're paying some amount of royalty for the use of these people who are not giving them anything. And maybe they're, you know, inserting ads and things to get some of that money back. But what it does get them is people who don't want to pay for one of these services, get them attached to Spotify, and then they upsell them to their service. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're up against a bunch of tech giants that are only offering essentially a paid service, and you're Spotify, then you're going to take some chances and you're going to do some things differently in order to stop. Well, here you go. Spotify's free tier is its main weapon in the fight against Apple Music, says this article. And that's my point exactly. Like, how are you going to fight Apple? And one of the ways is you give some stuff away and get loyalty to Spotify. Another way you beat Apple is that you do a better job with your auto-generated playlists. And the people that I've talked to who have spent a lot of time with Spotify as well as something like Apple Music say that the discovery playlists on Spotify are way better than the ones on Apple. And that my new music playlist on Apple Music is not very good. I actually just played it yesterday and I hated almost everything in it. And that's a bad sign when I have friends who love the Discovery Download playlist on Spotify and can't wait to hear it every week because they find new music that way. And I can't. Apple Music is not doing that for me. So this isn't the only front, right? But I feel like they got to try everything because they do have these platform owners that are trying to basically take them out by saying, why even go to a third party when we have it integrated into our service?
Right.
So they got to be different.
And do you have a HomePod?
I do.
Do you use it?
I use it some. The HomePod has replaced the Echo for random music playing in the living room because it's better than the Echo, but it hasn't replaced the Echo. We still have an Amazon Echo too.
Right.
The HomePod, I keep waiting for the stereo pair and the multi-room features and all these other things that they said would be there and that still haven't shipped. It sounds like the HomePod sales aren't particularly good right now, which is not surprising. It's very expensive. Mm-hmm. It sounds good. It's not necessarily a bad value for the sound, although the Sonos product sounds about the same and is cheaper. So it's interesting. It's a first crack. I think the question for Apple is, are they going to make adjustments to this product? Are they going to do a new version of it? Or are they going to walk away again? I don't think they can afford to walk away. I think smart speakers in the home is a place they need to be. But this was always a weird first crack, and it seems like the market has agreed that it's weird.
Yeah. So do you have the problem of it often when you say, when you try to talk to Siri, that it will answer first in when you're trying to talk on your phone or watch or iPad?
You know, I've never experienced that, but that's mostly because I have the trigger word that we're not going to say turned off on a bunch of my devices because I just don't. The reality is I would have them on if Siri were more useful, but this goes to the core of Apple's problem with HomePod and with Siri, which is Siri's not as good as it should be.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that the Echo's assistant is not also frustrating. They are both frustrating.
Yeah.
But Apple's is more frustrating.
It is more. I mean, maybe because we give them more money and we feel we expect more. I don't know.
No, I think it's not as good. I think bottom line, the failure rate on Siri is greater than the fail rate on Amazon's assistant.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that should lead into our next story. We're going to skip some, Kevin, and go on to the customer satisfaction story by Ben Baharin from Creative Strategies. He wrote about it in TechPinions, and I guess someone tweeted it out, so it went viral. I don't know if it was Marco Arment or somebody. So this was a really interesting study that they did about satisfaction for iPhone 10 owners. And specifically, like, I don't have a lot of experience with customer satisfaction surveys, but what they said is it's pretty amazing. Not only that it was 97% satisfaction, but 85% said that they were very satisfied.
Yeah, these are huge numbers, and you know who loves customer satisfaction, or as we like to say, customer sat? Tim Cook. Tim Cook, all he can talk about is customer sat. We have a little, it's basically the Tim Cook drinking game, which is you have to drink when he says customer sat. But Apple's customer satisfaction numbers, which is a super important measure, right? Uh-huh. Because that's, as far as Apple's concerned, like, they sell you a product, and if you're happy with it, they win. That's it's that simple. Their business is that simple. And the iPhone 10 satisfaction number is staggering. Like, those are very, very good numbers. And Apple usually leads in customer sat, but this is a case where they are way up there. But then, what about Siri?
I know, look at
not
that.
So,
little,
not so much.
Well, so the number one, if you're just listening, is how your iPhone 10 looks. So that's almost 100%. That's like the most satisfied. People are most satisfied with the way it looks and least satisfied with Siri. And in between is then the speed, the quality of your pictures, the OLED display, the gestures. I was surprised at the gestures being so high. I guess I like them. I just don't like them that they're not.
And these are all over 90% satisfaction, too. Face ID is over 90%. Battery life is over 90%. And then there's Siri down at about 20%. Brutal.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's not a surprise. And what do you buy that sort of argument that people make? Is like the reason it's not good is because they're protecting our privacy?
No. I mean, it's not I get it. And it means that Apple's challenge is different than maybe Google, but I don't believe it. I think the things that Siri is bad at, I mean, Apple has talked about how they try to do a lot of differential privacy where they're able to do machine learning without actually, you know, keeping your data. They anonymize it in a bunch of different ways. But this is the game that they have chosen to play. I think they can do a good assistant without, you know, compromising your privacy, and they just haven't done it. I think the key is that Apple values hardware and maybe hardware and software integration and has never really considered services and machine learning and the cloud a core part of what they are culturally. Even when they know that they need to pay attention to the cloud, culturally they're not, their company is not even structured to reward that. Now, that may be changing. They've made some moves. They made some hires. They've got somebody in charge of cloud services. They brought in Google's AI lead to do AI at Apple. So maybe that's an indication that they're trying to change the culture. But, you know, they're behind not because they're committed to privacy. They are. They're behind because they haven't done as good a job as their competitors.
Mm-hmm. What about the fact that they asked too much of Siri in the beginning? They didn't ask, but they claimed too much. Like, you know, I think there about a month ago, one of the creators of Siri came out and said, you know, it was only supposed to do, you know, this and this, help you find restaurant reservations. And then Apple came out and touted it as this great personal assistant. And then, you know, people were disappointed because it didn't live up to what Apple said they could do. And the creator said, well, it never could do that.
Yeah. Siri pays a price for being first. Like, Siri was first. Everybody was excited about it. Apple got a lot of benefit from that, but they paid the price because they were based on the earliest tech. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm sure there are sour grapes from the people who were at SRI, the source of Siri, because they had a vision for it that didn't match Apple's vision. I'm not sure that just because they invented Siri, they had a realistic view of where it was going to go. I think that you could look at both sides with some skepticism about what they said at the time. But, you know, the fact is that great, Apple was seen as having a lead, and then all the competitors came out, and then nothing seemed to happen with Siri. That Siri apparently, you know, Apple says keeps getting better. I guess they keep adding more stuff to it, but like Amazon sends me an email every week saying, here's what's new with Alexa. Mm-hmm. Oh, I said her name. Now she'll appear. And the that's impressive. And Apple, you know, again, culturally, it's secretive. I'd love for Apple to be out there every week saying, here's how Siri has changed this week and what we're doing to make this better, because it's a cloud service and we can change it all the time. It's not tied to your new iPhone. And Apple just, part of that is just they don't do that.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bad sign, because if they are iterating like that internally, they should communicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And by not communicating it, it feels like they're not iterating
mm-hmm.
Siri. And that you know, some of it's perception, but I think some of it's reality. Just look where Siri is now compared to the competition. It's mm-hmm. not great. I'm not saying that they can't catch up, and I'm not saying that the competition is perfect, because they really aren't. Like, I was reading HomePod reviews where people were laughing at terrible things the HomePod did when you talk to it. And it was funny, because that same day I had had a couple catastrophic mistakes on the part of my Amazon Echo.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yeah, they're all bad, mm-hmm. but you want them to be better. And Apple's is not better.
Yeah. And we also notice only when they're bad, right? Like when my Amazon Echo is turning off and on my lights by my voice, and, you know, just playing whatever music from the cloud I want, or, you know, when the HomePod is playing that playlist that I put together on Apple Music, like, it's amazing, but I don't think so. Oh, that's amazing. We only notice what it doesn't do.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we've got little things in our homes that you can theoretically say, play this song that I've randomly thought of, and it just plays it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to buy it, because you're subscribed to a music service,
right,
and you've got a device that listens.
Mm-hmm.
On my Echo, I can say, can you play the song that goes, and do some random lyrics,
mm-hmm.
and it will immediately play that song. It's amazing. Like, when these things work, they are spectacular.
Yeah.
And I do think that sets them up for frustration mm-hmm. when they don't work, because
right.
you saw the promise, and then you see where all the cracks are, where it isn't quite right.
Exactly. Well, one way Siri might be getting better is Apple's purchase of Shazam, which is now in danger of maybe not going through. The EU wants to, they have a probe into the deal. They want to make sure that customers still have choice, which I think is so interesting that, you know, this is, I mean, I get it, and I want customers to have choice too, but like, since when was it like our right to have the choice to say, what song is this? And for it to go to offer us every music service we could get it from.
Yeah, and you wonder, Shazam is this relatively small company, and you look at the tech world now, and it's kind of hard to believe that they can survive. This seems like a feature that's going to be integrated into every operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And so where does that leave them? Like, are they hoping that the giants will license their technology? Because
mm-hmm.
at some point they'll probably build their own, and at that point Shazam is useless. So if the whole model with a lot of tech companies is you build it up, you create value, and then one of the giants basically buys you out,
mm-hmm.
and then the regulators step in and say, no, we're not going to allow that, then like, what, that may break your business at that point.
Right.
And it's just the same thing I hear from people who are like, Apple should be, you know, Apple should be stopped because they have a monopoly on this thing on Apple products. And it's like, Apple doesn't have a monopoly on anything, because in every market Apple is participating in, there are other huge competitors. You know, Fitbit is there for the Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Android is there for iOS. Windows is there for macOS. Apple is not the dominant player in any platform area right now, right? So there's, you know, but people see competition differently.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Shazam, it seems like a feature that everybody is going to want. And so, yeah, do we, and if they're that great at it, then they're the only ones who've got it. So
right.
I don't know. But at the same time, I get that regulators are concerned about giant tech companies swallowing all of the little players, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, you could argue that a duopoly in some area is not that much better than a monopoly. So anytime you've got 2-3 players and that's it. But that goes for every, like, that. Then you need to scrutinize every deal that happens in the tech world, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're worried that, you know, when you ask for the song, it will only go to Apple Music. But when I can no longer even watch a YouTube video on my Echo Show because, you know, they've stopped that. And,
yep.
You know, you can't, there, everybody does that. All three of them do that. You know, the Amazon app just appeared on the Apple TV. Like, they all sort of protect their stuff in a way that this just seemed sort of shocking to me, that this is what the EU is probing. But I think it's also part of the time. Well, you know, Shazam is a European company, and their, you know, regulation is big on their mind because of Facebook.
I would love, I just don't know what the legal foundation would be, and it might be new laws. I would love for some regulatory body or some governmental body to say, if you run a large computing platform, you need to list options. Essentially, like, I'm hesitant to say let's legislate the open in button, but there's something to be said for saying if you offer your own music service, you also need to allow competitors access in that dialogue box. Mm-hmm. You know, that the we talk about, like, iOS for ages doesn't let you set a default application for things that is not the Apple one. So if you want a different mail client, you can't. I mean, you can use it, but there are certain things that will just put you in mail no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure legislation is a thing that makes good products. I'm pretty sure it is a thing that makes bad products. But at the same time, we seem to be headed for a world where if you're in Google's world, you know they push you for Google services, and Amazon's world pushes you to Amazon, Apple's pushes you to Apple. And what are you left with, like, if you're trying to compete across, like Spotify is? Mm-hmm. Because again, we're back to these huge platform owners. So you want to create some system where the huge platform owners, short of breaking them up, which would be the other way to go, where they have to play fair. And, you know, something like this, that's not, the problem is, it's like with the Amazon Books thing, where Amazon was the threat in terms of the market, but Apple got the slap down from the federal court for collusion with publishers. Monopoly law was built in like 100 years ago to stop the big trusts. It's not really built for this weird world we live in with these tech giants. So, you know, maybe there is a case for some legislation that changes the way we view monopolies to be a little bit broader. I'm always hesitant to say that because there's always that argument that getting the government more involved in telling businesses how to run their businesses does not make for efficient businesses. I get the argument. At the same time, consumer protection, consumers don't seem to be protected by some of the existing stuff, as we saw in the ebook case with Apple,
right,
where consumers, I don't think, won out by having Amazon completely control that market.
Mm-hmm. And our last bit of news, which is pretty big news, are the rumors about the iPhone SE 2 could arrive soon, probably without a headphone jack. I think it was the Fast Company headline this morning. It was like, Apple gets serious about killing the headphone jack, which I just thought was so funny. It's like so dramatic. So yeah, Mac Okatara said that they think it's going to, based on cases, I think, same size case, no headphone jack, an A10 chip, possibly Qi supported glass back.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So these are all rumors. Also rumored around $550. And the way they can get that price with the glass back and the A10 chip is to have an LCD screen instead of an OLED screen.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of Apple products, a lot of iPhones especially, that just won't have OLED. And that's one way that they differentiate between the high end of the line and the rest of the line, and that they keep the price down. I know a lot of people look at the SE and think, it's an iPhone 5. It's so boring. It's so old. Why does it exist?
Mm-hmm.
But
I just bought two.
when Apple very rarely breaks out, like, what model of iPhone. They'll tell you iPhone sales, but they won't tell you which models.
Mm-hmm.
They will occasionally say, like, the moment the iPhone 10 came on sale, Tim Cook said, it became their best-selling iPhone, which is counter to all these rumors that, oh, the iPhone 10 isn't selling well. No, it's selling the best of all the iPhones. The iPhone SE, when it first came out, Apple actually said, we were taken by surprise at how popular it was. And it was something like between 10 and 15% of the phones sold during a time when Apple was selling a huge number of, like, iPhone 6 and 6S models. And so it's got a market. It's got a market for people who want a small phone. It's got people who don't want to spend as much on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. There are lots of parts of the world where the iPhone SE is the phone that Apple leads with, because the people in those markets don't have the money to spend on an iPhone 10.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of reasons to do it. And the fact is, I mean, why did you buy them? I mean, I know people who just don't like big phones. Bottom line.
The iPhone 10 is the perfect size phone. I bought them for my twins who turned 13. One of them had my old iPhone 6 from 2015, and the other one had an iPhone 6S that he lost. because he's 13 or because he's 12. And it possibly got stolen, unclear. But I had to buy two phones, and I went to Twitter, and I was trying to decide between a refurbished 7 and the SE, the iPhone SE, and everyone said the SE for that age child.
Yeah.
Also because the reason why we had to replace the 6 is it had been dropped 2,000 times, but this is a better size for your hand when you're smaller. They don't need it. And they we ended up returning one of the 2s because we got an iFixit case, and one of my boys fixed the 6 and nice. Replaced the battery, and it's perfect. But he loves it. I mean, my other son loves the SE. It's perfect. And I don't understand kids that are walking around with iPhone 10s or iPhone 7s or 8s. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to
me. There's a place for an iPhone SE in the lineup. And the thing is, it's old now, right? It's a couple years old. Mm-hmm. And when Apple released it, though, they released it based on the tech that was in the previous phones that were released 6 months earlier. So if that follows, we should see something that's kind of like an iPhone 8. In an SE case, wireless charging would surprise me. Mm-hmm. I think it would be great if they put that feature in. I just kind of assume that they wouldn't redesign the back. That would be like a bridge too far, and they would keep it. But if they're taking the headphone jack out, then they're obviously doing some bigger internal changes. In fact, you could argue that the SE was so successful, and the SE was like literally just the iPhone 5S with some changes to it on the inside, but the external is exactly the same. You could argue that that was enough of a success for them to put a little more money into this every 2 year design update and actually make bigger changes to the cases. Also, I wonder after a while, the tech that you use in these old products stops being available and you need to make a new version of it. Right. I feel like that comes up every now and then. The MacBook Air, I wonder about the same thing. It's like at some point, are they just not going to have the parts to make that thing anymore? And the SE is a little bit like that. Like, it's time to bring it up to speed. It's probably actually better for Apple to be using the same processor that they're already making for the 8 and the 10 instead of this old processor that they're still making just to stick in the SE or and maybe like an Apple TV or something like that. So anyway, yeah, people who watch a show like this are probably more inclined to be skeptical about the SE because they want the latest and greatest and the cutting edge tech. And the SE is not ever going to be that, but it's popular with a certain slice of the market, and Apple's iPhone market size is so huge now that they can afford to sell an SE 2, an 8, an 8 Plus, a 10. And they're still selling like the 7 and the 6S and the 7 and the 6S Plus, right? Like, they can afford to slice it all those different ways for different parts of the market. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Not everyone needs 10.
I also think, the people that watch this can tell the difference between getting a 7, like a refurbished 7, and an SE. Because, like, they're very specific, different, like, there's very, very specific reasons why you'd get one instead of the other. And I think a lot of parents buying phones for their kids are just like, well, they tell me everyone has a 10, and that's the latest version, so I might as well, like, pay the, you know, $35 a month for the rest of my life to pay, you know? Because if they're buying from the carriers, which I think, like, if we're going to talk about, like, if they're buying from the carriers, it's not $1,000 or, you know, it's...
Well, I mean, Apple will let you do that too, where you spend a monthly fee. But either way, it adds up to, it is the equivalent of that because the SE, because it's so much cheaper, will be a lot less per month too, or you can buy it outright. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, refurbs are always good to look for. Older models are not bad to look for. The SE, if they revise this SE too, given what the price of the SE is, that's going to be a great deal because it's going to be iPhone 8 level tech probably in a small phone, but also a much cheaper phone.
Yeah, if it's going to be $550, that's probably the
You know who loves the SE are the case makers who made these iPhone 5 cases that were laying around and they're like, what are we going to do with these? And I went on a trip last winter to Hawaii, and I had an iPhone 5 waterproof case that I had been like planning to take, and by the time we take the trip to Hawaii, it's like iPhone 5.
Yeah.
And then I said to myself, iPhone SE totally fit, worked fine, worked great. So there are lots of accessories for the iPhone SE, so I hope they don't change the shape too much with the new version. Just leave that headphone jack there.
I think that's all the Apple news.
There's a lot going on,
which means it's now time for AppCap, so we get to wear our hats.
Oh no.
We wear caps. They're not hats. They're caps.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are.
Cap rhymes with app.
Uh-huh.
Mine's the one with the jingle bells, if you're only listening to this. We both have horns. App cap means our favorite app that we're using this week. And Jason is going to mention something Leo's talked about before. It's an aspirational app for me. I have it. I don't use it, but I want to use it. So I want to hear how you use Drafts.
Yes, Drafts 5 came out last week. Drafts has been around for quite a while. It started as an app that was basically a notes app, basically just put text in it. Drafts 5 is huge. It's got a free version, but it's also got a pro subscription that you can get. It's got support for multiple formats. So like I write in Markdown, I can write articles in Markdown, which is what I did. I actually wrote my article about writing on my iPad in Drafts 5. Mm. It's got JavaScript core in it. So basically any feature that you want that it doesn't have, you can write in JavaScript because it's completely scriptable. And there's also a library of existing macros, basically, that you can download. It's a little, if you remember the app Editorial, mm-hmm. it's a little bit like that in that it's a text editor with this whole macro engine inside it that you can use to extend its functionality. But the reason that people love Drafts is because I was talking to Merlin Mann about this last week on my podcast Upgrade, because he's a real believer in it. And I said, so explain to me why Drafts is such a great app. And what he said really struck me as being brilliant, which is Drafts, the whole idea of Drafts is you go to Drafts to put text in, and then you figure out where you want the text to go.
Mm.
And I know that's a weird kind of like mental shift, but the idea that when you've got something that you need to write down on your iPhone or your iPad, do you want to stop and say, where is this going? What app should I use? Should this be in Reminders? Should this be in Twitter? Should this be in Notes? Should this be in a text editor? If you embrace Drafts, what you end up doing is just putting it in Drafts and then figure out where it goes later, because it's got all these actions that are pretty powerful that let you shoot it off kind of wherever you want it to go, whether it's to Twitter or whether it's to save it as a file in a Dropbox or push it to Evernote or push it to OneDrive. And then, of course, you can use the scripting engine to add to these features. So the idea is whether it's a snippet of text that you just want to remember for later, something funny that you thought of, or it's an entire article that you're writing or a book that you're writing. It's got a whole tagging system so you can keep them all separately. It's got an Apple Watch app so that you can speak something and it automatically gets tagged as having been from your Apple Watch, so you can pull those up later and say, what was that thing that I said to my Apple Watch? But you do the text input in Drafts, and then you figure out where it's going to go. And that does require a real shift in your the way that you approach text input on iOS. But I like the idea of not having that barrier, because I feel that every time, which is like, should this be in Notes?
Mm-hmm.
No. Is this an article? Maybe I'll leave a reminder. And when I talk to Merlin, what he says is, I just open Drafts. And then I put the thing in, and then I can deal with it later, or I can send it where it needs to go right then. And there's something, you know, and it's, you know, yeah, it's got text editing features and Markdown support and syntax highlighting and keyboard shortcuts and all of the great stuff that you'd expect from a text editor. But it also can be as simple as you want it to be.
Do you use the Apple Watch app?
I have not tried the Drafts Apple Watch app yet. I'm not living my full Drafts lifestyle yet. But I like that idea of being able to leave myself a reminder, basically, of like this snippet of text that I want to grab later.
Yeah, and you don't even have to talk to it. You can write. You can scribble.
You can scribble it. Yeah.
Yeah, I have taken many notes in Drafts. I haven't done anything to them yet.
Well,
I haven't done anything.
As long as
they're
written down somewhere.
Yeah,
I like the idea that the tagging system is robust enough that you can have like projects tagged. You can have the input method tagged, so you can say, show me all my Apple Watch snippets mm-hmm. that I put in.
Yeah.
So it is, yeah, it's got a basic set of functionality that is pretty impressive. And then if you want to push it further, you can do that. The pro subscription version lets you write scripts. I think the free version lets you download other people's scripts. So there's definitely a line there that you can use a bunch of stuff for free, and then you can push it beyond if you want to do the subscription, which is great because that allows the developer, who's a guy named Greg, I believe. It's Agile Tortoise is the name of the mm-hmm. company, and it lets him support his family, right? If you love Drafts, but you can get started without having to subscribe.
But the app does cost money, though, right? Isn't it?
I think it may be free.
Oh.
Now, I'm not 100% on that. And then there's a subscription. Do we know?
It says, what does it say there?
It's free. See, there you go. Yeah. Free. And then there's a trial. And you don't have to subscribe. The subscription to Drafts Pro unlocks a whole bunch of other features. So the nice thing is you can try it out. And even if you just use it as a basic kind of input feature. And there's a great review of it on MacStories.net last week.
Federico.
And it's not written by Federico. It's a long review from the guy who probably knows drafts better than anybody, who's Tim. And then his last name is, I'm going to say, Nahamak. It's not hummus. It's Nahamak. And Tim wrote this huge review of it. So if you're curious about Drafts 5, Tim's Mac Stories review is the place to go.
Awesome. Yeah. I think the reason why I haven't used it is I don't have like a long project.
The thing is you can use it for what you want. You can use it. You can literally use it for individual little notes. Mm-hmm. Or you can use it for a big project. I know a lot of people like, I use Scrivener a lot for big writing projects. People like Ulysses a lot. Mm-hmm. Drafts can do that, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
It could be for little bits too. Or in talking to Merlin and Federico about it, or both, which is really interesting, that you can literally have like little sentence fragments, as well as giant projects. And they're all mixed together because they're tagged and stuff. You don't have to worry about getting confused about what goes where.
Right. Or just text messages, too. Like you can use it to send someone.
I think Merlin was saying that he does it for tweets.
Yeah.
That he'll actually like think, oh, that might be a funny thing to tweet. And he'll put it in drafts and then he'll send it to his Twitter app.
Yeah, that's good, too, because you don't always want to stop what you're doing to tweet too. I think long term I'm hoping to write Leo's authorized or unauthorized biographies. Every time he says
we'll see
crazy,
how that goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Every time he says something crazy, I should start using drafts.
That's right. That's right. 12:43 PM.
Yeah.
You won't believe what Leo just did.
Yeah, exactly. So that maybe is my long-term project. Okay. So my app of the week, I try not to use Uber. I like to use Lyft. I don't really use it at home, but on vacation, I'm constantly using it. When I went to New York, we used Lyft constantly and it was so expensive. And I would like to compare prices, and you can open the Uber app and compare the price and then open the Lyft app and compare the price. But there's an app called Farewell that lets you compare the price, in one app, just opening one app, and then it'll take you to that app. So here it is. It's, I've put my location in. This so you can see it, and I wanted to go to the airport, and I put in the airport, and if I wanted to take an Uber, it's going to cost $127, and a Lyft is going to cost $114, which is a big difference.
The Uber will come sooner too.
Oh yeah, the Uber will come sooner. So.
And just and that's not, we should say before the show started, we looked at another sample and Lyft was cheaper.
Oh,
so it definitely goes back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the secret is, oh look.
Yeah, Lyft is cheaper.
Lyft is cheaper, Uber is more expensive.
Yeah, let's try
in this example. But
look at that. Now it's closer to the difference in price. So this has ads in it. You're probably not going to use it on your iPad. So it's obviously an iPhone app, but it's a free app. And then, you know, it'll take you right to Lyft or Uber, whichever you choose. I don't have the Lyft app on my iPad, because I don't travel with my iPad. But it's okay if you do. No judgment.
Yeah, thank you. I'll tell you what. I would not call a Lyft with my iPad.
I
love my iPad and travel with it, I would still use my iPhone for that.
So pretty simple app. Farewell. I like it. And I use it now because it seems like something that both Uber and Lyft might decide they don't want, having to scrape their database to create this. So you might use it while you can. That's what I say. Jason, thank you so much for joining us. Jason, of course, is a podcast. You have your own podcast empire.
I have so many podcasts that I'm on. It's too many, quite frankly, too many.
Well, I'll talk about your podcast that I'm on.
Okay. Yeah, do that. That's a good one.
So recently I appeared on your Download podcast.
Yeah.
And I hope I'll be invited back again. I used a bad microphone.
It's okay. We're working through it.
Yes.
The microphone was good.
I think I connected it wrong.
Yeah, that might be.
Yeah.
It might be. That's relay.fm/download.
Yeah.
And it's a weekly tech news podcast. It's kind of like Twit, but it's a lot shorter than Twit. It's about an hour mm-hmm. or sometimes even less than that. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. Every week we have a couple of very interesting guests that join me and my producer, who's Stephen Hackett, who's the co-founder of Relay.
And you also do several, well, you do at least one TV podcast. You do lots of TV
podcasts? I do lots. So there are a bunch of tech podcasts and some other stuff, space and things like mm-hmm. that at relay.fm and at theincomparable.com. You can find my pop culture podcasts, including the TV Talk Machine, which I do with Tim Goodman from The Hollywood Reporter. We mm-hmm. talk about new TV shows and also what's the latest in streaming and stuff like that, because there's a lot of interesting stuff in how the TV world is changing with the advent of, you know, not just Netflix and Amazon, but things like Apple mm-hmm. spending billions of dollars to enter that. And so we talk about all that stuff over there.
My dad is a big fan of that one.
Oh, nice.
And he just retired, so now he has more time to
listen to podcasts.
To watch TV. Watch all the TV shows
okay. Well,
we talk about.
Listen to podcasts, then watch TV. It's a beautiful combination.
So on Sunday night, I watched the premiere of Westworld.
Yep.
No spoilers. Where can I go on your network to hear someone talk to me about it?
If you go to theincomparable.com, you'll see we have a podcast called TV, which is sort of an overarching podcast for lots. But you can see over on the right there, if you're watching this, a Westworld one is one of the slots in the TV podcast. That's Don and Kelly who break that down. Don Melton, longtime engineer at Apple on the WebKit team, and Kelly Gamont. And they talk about Westworld every week.
Oh, okay.
So they're back in session now. I did Star Trek Discovery and Doctor Who and Game of Thrones, which means that I was doing those weekly podcasts for like a year. It was an extra podcast. I'm very tired now. I'm very happy that Don and Kelly are covering Westworld. I can just listen.
Yeah. But no spoilers, even though I really want to, but I won't. Do you really not know how many podcasts you yourself host? You don't know the number?
I'm on some that I don't really host, but I kind of produce, so it's kind of hard to say. There are, there are like four or five that I do basically every week, but there are also a bunch that we record a big block of them and then release them, and so I don't record them every week. They just sort of happen every so often, like, some of our game shows and stuff mm-hmm. like that are a little bit different. But there are, like, I've got my Monday podcast and my Tuesday podcast and my Wednesday podcast, and, you know how it is.
Yeah, I do. So The Incomparable, that's the best place to go.
TheIncomparable.com and Relay.fm will get you all my podcasts, and SixColors.com will get you all the things I write.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you for watching the show. You can subscribe to it, twit.tv/iOS. You can subscribe to the video. If you want to see our hats and wonder what's jingling, you can subscribe just to the audio. You can email me. Email me at megan@twit.tv. I love to have your questions. Send video. Just record a video on your iPhone and send it to me. We want to see your face and answer all your questions. And next week, we will be talking to Georgia Dow while Leo is still on our vacation. We're going to talk about mood apps, because she's a psychotherapist and knows about this. And I'm moody, so it's great. So check in next week. You can watch us live at twit.tv/live. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Snell.
See you next week.
Bye.